Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winning.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
They are who we thought they were.
Are we really doing a show today? Is that what I'm here to do? Am I here to talk into a microphone and talk about the NFL and football? I guess that's what I'm here to do. My name is Pod Vader. Many of you know me as Jay Soderberg. I am a Patriots fan, and that's why I've started the show off on such a mellow note. Today we're going to be talking about the NFC South, though. I'm joined by the superfans from the NFC South representing the Falcons. I have Tim, who is at a 9-year-old soccer game. Tim, what's the score?
The score is currently 1-0. Bad guys. I'm not sure the team names on this. All the kids look identical. The only reason I know which one I'm cheering for is because apparently he's wearing number 3, but he has not yet entered the game. To date, we have had a pigeon get kicked, and we've had a ref take a ball to the back of the head. Beyond that, it's been fairly unproductive and awful.
That is simply awesome. Going now across the pond to Dan, who's probably a little bit more schooled in the ways of the soccer. He represents the Bucks. Dan, what's happening over there today?
Hey, I am full of green tea and croissant, so you know I'm ready to go.
Excellent. And in Carolina, we've got Jimmy Six. What's happening, Jimmy?
Hey, what's up? Dan, I really can't stand Chelsea, and I hope you're not a Chelsea fan.
I am not, so you can rest safe.
And just joining us, he was here before, but he dropped off and he's back. It is our Saints super fan, Chase. What's happening, Chase?
What's going on, Pod? Sorry, I had a little phone issue, but hopefully it's fixed now.
I believe it will be. You're talking with us, and that's all that matters. Speaking of talking with us, send us an email, nextfanup@gmail.com. We're still taking superfan applications. We really need an Arizona Cardinals superfan. So send those in, nextfanup@gmail.com. You can hit us up on Twitter as well, @NFU Podcast on Twitter, and on Facebook. We're Next Fan Up. Just search for us. We're easy to find. Or Facebook.com/NFU Podcast. So we're going to touch on one item before we get to the NFC South ever so briefly.
With the first pick in the NFL draft.
Won't be done by the New England Patriots, allegedly. The NFL came down with their punishment for the Wells report. I had said last week that if they wanted to suspend Tom Brady for 4 games for not participating in the investigation, I was fine with that. And Tom Brady got suspended for 4 games. So I am fine with that. However, the NFL then takes away a first round choice in the next coming draft from the Patriots. They also take a 4th round pick in the 2017 NFL draft and then fine the team $1 million, $1 million. And basically the explanation is institutional control, what the NCAA likes to call institutional control. Patriots should have known, even though they've been cleared of any wrongdoing, they should have known what was going on and done something about it. It's a bunch of bunk and hooey. The NFL, I think, realizes they've got a ton of egg on their face. I'm not going to go through again and give all my arguments about why the Wells report is a big pile of dog, because I did that last week and I said what I had to say. And at this point, I'm not changing anybody's mind. I am a little disappointed by a few people out there that I've seen that have said, as the Patriots had website the Patriots released their rebuttal, the line-by-line rebuttal to the Wells Report? I think it's wellsreportrebuttal.com, is it not?
I believe so.
I believe it's wellsreportcontext.com. So you can read what the Patriots have to think about the Wells Report. there's a few more interesting items that have come out since this whole thing has occurred about how the NFL allowed the attendant to walk away with all the footballs. Well, why wasn't any of the NFL officials that were in the room with the footballs or any of the NFL officials that saw him walking down the hall, as you can see on camera, why did none of them stop him from going to the field? Doesn't seem to make a lot of sense there, especially if footballs are so important and the PSI of the footballs are so important. Why is it that the NFL releases a report with science that they ultimately say, well, we can't really rely on the science. We have to weigh it the right way. But then when you see that the science actually shows that the Colts played with underinflated footballs for the entirety of the game, so many things here don't make any sense to me. But whatever. What is done is done. It's not going to change. I'm not going to change anyone's opinion at this point. I invite you to read whatever is out there on the internet. I just discovered a PFT commenter who Tim says I should get on this show. I will try and make that happen. He's part of SB Nation, and Blog Talk Radio has a great relationship with SB Nation. So we'll see what happens from there. But I think it's a bunch of bunk and hooey. Tom Brady being suspended 4 games, I'm fine with. Everything else, I am very unhappy about. So I'm very glad that I named my man crush of the year in the Atlanta Falcons, because clearly I'm going to be a little bit more invested in the NFC this year, Tim, because the Patriots are going to be crud, especially without a secondary to bring things back to the football field. But the Falcons, my friend, they are not going to be crud. I believe they are the eventual champions of this division.
I can't agree more with you on that. You know, we haven't, you know, dove into it, but the Falcons draft, I mean, the first 5 picks are all going to be people who are going to be able to come in and contribute immediately. And that's something that hasn't happened in a very, very long time in Atlanta. And yeah, I mean, excitement is high. You know, we're riding, you know, the Hawks is there, you know, eliminating Washington last night. And I mean, the city of Atlanta is a buzz, and we've just forgot that the Braves even exist right now. So, you know, we're feeling good.
So you're a super fan. So you just said you can't agree more with me. Is the general feeling there in Atlanta that the Falcons are the team to beat in the NFC South this year?
Well, we're always hesitant because we've had so many really, really surprisingly bad teams over the years. And, you know, that trend may continue. But with the way that things are looking and Dan Quinn coming in and instilling a no-nonsense, you know, idea with this team, you know, and everything that we're putting together and, you know, where we're moving people and putting them in positions that actually make sense and, you know, building, you know, a quote legion of boom here in Atlanta, you know, besides free safety, which is a gaping hole right now. You know, I mean, things are looking up and, you know, everything we're reading says, you know, 10-6 and potentially winning the division. And I mean, last year, 10-6 would have blown everybody in this division out of the water. So, you know, we'll see what happens.
Well, let's go to the winner of the division last year in Carolina, Jimmy Six, for some rebuttal.
I can't disagree anymore. First off, the punishment that the Patriots took, I think that Atlanta should have gotten the same punishment for their little noise pollution down there in Atlanta. Don't you agree?
I certainly think that the two punishments are fairly equal, if not more swayed for the Falcons. I believe there's a bigger advantage in noise at a home game than the PSI of a football. It's more probable than not, that's for sure.
Yeah, I just to touch on the Wells report, I tried to avoid the whole situation all month because I could care less. I don't think the PSI really makes a difference whether or not a quarterback gets an advantage or disadvantage. I do think I think they should appeal and either ask for no punishment and go complete not guilty or take the full 4. Don't even accept the 2-game appeal. I think you should go all or nothing and really put the pressure on the NFL. But outside of that, I really care less what happens. I think it's don't think they have much evidence to go by, but I'll stay in the South and worry about what we got. I definitely think Atlanta is, I mean, Atlanta's up on the, I think all the teams are improved for this coming season. But, I mean, as a remaining defending champs, I think we've improved just as much, if not remained the same. I think last year was a blip on the radar for all the South as far as the records. I think it was just a down year. I think all four teams will be pushing towards the 500 mark. But I think it's going to be very competitive. Atlanta's up on the rise, obviously. I think the Saints are going to be a lot better, as well as Tampa. So I think it's going to be a tight race. I don't think it's going to be a blowout whatsoever. I think it's going to be coming down to the last couple of weeks, just see whoever's the hot team. And it should be an interesting race.
Well, Chase, your Saints came in second by only a half a game. Who's the team to beat in this division this year?
Well, Pod, I agree with the two guys before me. I think this is going to be one of the tighter races we've had in quite a few years. This is the first time in a while that I'm actually nervous to play Atlanta. I love the Dan Quinn hiring. I was praying that he would go somewhere else. And then pairing him with the free agents they got on defense and then Vic Beasley, that's going to be a scary defense if he could put it all together. The Panthers are always under the radar to me. They never look like, I mean, sure, they have the defense, but they never look like a team that you should be scared of until you get on the field with them. But I also think that we improved just as much as any of the other teams did in the division. Our defense went from top five to second worst in the league in 1 year, and hopefully this year we'll get out there and show that last year was the fluke. This is the first year in the draft that Rob Ryan gets control over who he drafts on defense, and with the 6 out of our 9 picks on the defensive side of the ball, this is the year that Ryan has a chance to make or break himself. If he doesn't improve that defense drastically, this is going to be his last year in New Orleans, and I think he knows that. And the good news is he has a couple of strong guys on the defensive side of the ball that are going to be playing for contracts this year, as well as playing with a chip on their shoulder. Even Tampa Bay, I think, is going to be much better this year. It's amazing the difference just having a above-average quarterback can be for you. And if Winston can keep himself out of trouble, I think this is going to be a really good NFC South this year. People seem to forget that 2-3 years ago, the NFC South was thought of as one of the top divisions in football. And this year, it's looking like we're going to get back to that and not be in a joke anymore.
Well, Dan, your quarterback was just brought up. I mean, how much faith do you have in your rookie quarterback? Is your team perhaps poised for a surprise?
I've got quite a lot of faith in Jameis. I mean, the fact that he's gone and sued this woman over the sexual assault case kind of tells you that he's confident that he did nothing wrong, and I think the Buccaneers bought into that. Like Chase said, having an above-average quarterback means everything, and the fact that they added those two offensive linemen in the second round should keep the pocket clean so he can get the ball out wide to Evans and Jackson. So I see no I think each one of these teams in the NFC South will have a winning record at the end of the year.
Wow, I think I agree with you, Dan.
I don't see that happening.
I was about to say that's pretty bold, Tim.
Just what, mathematically, I'm not feeling that.
All right. What about this, Tim? Can you see 3 teams out of this division finishing 500 or better?
No.
No.
I see 2. I see New Orleans and Atlanta finishing 500 or better.
What are you not liking about Carolina? Wait, time out. Boop. Let's go back. What are you not liking about Carolina this year, Tim?
The thing that scares me about Carolina every single year is the run game. And you see the teams that are making it, you know, farther and farther in the playoffs to have a decent run game. And I don't see Carolina putting it together. They needed to address the offensive line, and they didn't. And the reason they needed to address the offensive line was to protect Cam. But they also need to, you know, be able to run the ball. And I feel like every single year they have less and less in their running game. And I just don't see them being able to put it together.
You can't say we didn't address the line. The line was terrible to begin with. And we did add pieces. Yes, they are terrible pieces, but they are better pieces than what we had. So I'd say we addressed the line very poorly. But as far as our run game I don't think has been significant for at least 3 or 4 years, even though we've kept D'Angelo and Jonathan Stewart. I don't think either of them have had a strong impact since they both ran for 1,000 in 2008. And we got rid of D'Angelo, we kept Jonathan Stewart. He's going to get hurt by the third game. I think the run game is going to be just as below average as it was in years before. I think it's going to be effective enough to keep pressure off Cam, but I don't think much has changed as far as the run game from the last couple of years. Just the names have changed. I think Stewart will be banged up for probably a quarter of the games, and I think Fozzie Whitaker and who the heck we're going to have back there, whether it's Jordan Todman or Cam Alston that we drafted, I think we're going to have an effective impact. But I definitely think the offensive line is much, I wouldn't say much improved, but it's improved. I think we've stayed the course, and I definitely don't think we'll be below 500. I could see us finishing at 500, but below 500, I think that's pushing it.
I also think we need to remember that the NFC South as a whole have some pretty easy schedules this year, at least on paper. I think that helps our case out a good bit.
What divisions are you playing this year, Chase?
We have the
AFC South and
NFC East, I believe.
Yeah,
NFC East.
Well, the NFC, those aren't world beaters for sure. Although you always have to be careful about the Giants on the road, and the Eagles this year, I think, are going to do some things that are going to surprise some teams as well. But no, I mean, that is fairly light. Dan, you had a few things you wanted to throw in there.
Yeah, no, I just don't understand why. I mean, you and Tim think the Falcons are going to do really well, and that's, I guess, based purely on the defense, because you didn't add any offensive linemen, and you're going to go as far as Matt Ryan goes. Chase said, you know, it's all about the quarterback. Having an above-average quarterback to Tampa means a hell of a lot. But we've added some offensive linemen to protect. So how do you think you're going to put points on the board if Matt Ryan sat on the ground?
The biggest issue the Falcons have had with offensive line is just depth. And they've brought in several depth players. So, you know, it's not like we have nothing behind, you know, Sam Baker anymore. We don't have nothing behind Peter Kahns and Joe Hawley anymore. You know, we've been able to develop offensive linemen, you know, by a trial by fire scheme. And towards the end of last year, the offensive line was a lot better than it was at the beginning of the year. And we've brought in, I want to say, like 3 or 4 backup pieces. Even this week, we signed Tyler Palumbis from Washington, who has familiarity with Dan Quinn from when he played in Seattle. And he's played in Kyle Shanahan's scheme, you know, when Shanahan was in Washington. So being able to bring him in as depth, you know, as long as there's not some crazy fluke injury like we've had, you know, the past 2 years, on the offensive line, then the offensive line will be better.
I can see the Falcons going 8-8. I can't see them going all the way to the playoffs. I think it's going to be the Saints are going to be the team to beat.
Interesting. Chase, what do you think about that? Is your team the one to beat?
I would like to think so. The thing about pretty much all the teams in this division, though, are when we go into the year with high expectations, that's when it seems like we take a step back. And when we go flying in under the radar, that's when we surprise people. And I'm seeing from pretty much all of the local beat writers that this roster is shaping up to look a lot like the 2006 and 2009 rosters, where we have a lot of not superstar players on the front seven, but journeymen who have experience, the leadership, the football intelligence to help the young guys out and provide depth when needed.
I mean, honestly, honestly, I look at the Saints' depth chart right now on offense. You look to be okay. I wouldn't say that you're definitely world beaters. I mean, you do have Drew Brees, and that I would say, and I don't think anybody here can argue that Drew Brees is probably the best quarterback in this division.
I don't necessarily agree with that. I think it'd be Matt Ryan.
I'm here to disagree with you.
When the Falcons superfan says no.
I would argue that, that on paper, in this division, the Saints might have the best offensive line, the best quarterback, the best running back core. Our tight ends and receivers are worrisome, but we've seen Drew Brees for 4 or 5 years without superstars at those positions put up 4,300-plus yards and 30 touchdowns a season. So, and I have faith in Sean Payton to look at the young receivers and tight ends on this roster and know whether or not we can make things work with that. And the big key is if our defense can play anywhere in the top 20 of this league, I think the Saints are going to be in line for 10-6. I don't see 11-5, even maybe 12-4. If we can show up on the road and get back our home dominance like in years past, I think we're going to surprise some people this year if we can put it all together and if Rob Ryan can use these young defensive pieces and put it all together.
You know, it's funny you brought up the running backs, and I was like, really? And then I looked at the other team's running backs, and I think you're right. I mean, Mark Ingram.
Evan Coleman will be the truth.
Wow.
I love Coleman. I have two Coleman jerseys hanging up in my closet right now. I'm hoping he makes the roster so I can wear them this year.
I mean, that's hanging a lot on a rookie, though, that's unproven at this point, Tim. So, I mean, I agree. I mean, I love the draft for the Falcons, and I love the Falcons altogether, and I do think that they are still the team to beat here. But I will say, I think Mark Ingram is honestly the best running back in this division.
And we introduced C.J. Spiller. And we have
Kieran. Yeah, I'd put Spiller over Ingram.
Yeah, any day.
Well, that's a good thing. We're three deep. We can run between the tackles with three guys, and we have two guys capable of swinging it outside and catching balls in the passing game. So, I mean, I'm not saying we have the best running game in the league, but in this division, I don't think that's saying much. I don't think it's saying too much to say we have the best running back core. I mean, Ingram would have had 1,000 yards last year if he hadn't missed a game due to injury. And the last time we saw C.J. Spiller playing the way that Peyton's going to play him this year, he had 1,600 all-purpose yards, if I'm not mistaken. And we have a better offensive line than the Buffalo Bills have in the last few years.
As I'm looking at the wide receiving corps right now, since we're going pretty much position by position at this point, I have to say, I mean, I've made it perfectly clear since we started the show, I like the Falcons, but I do like, Dan, what you guys have going in your wide receiving corps in Tampa Bay. I think they have a chance to be really exciting this year.
Yeah, I think, well, Mike Evans is the future. We all know that. He's going to be a top five receiver in the next couple of years. I actually think they're looking to move Jackson at the end of this year. But with him and Jackson, and I mean, in the draft, we got the kid out of, what's his name, out of Nebraska, Kenny Bell. I did like that pick a lot, but we haven't really got a slot receiver. That's my only worry, and we never have had. You know, when your best slot receiver of the last, you know, 10, 15 years is Joe Jerovicius, man, you've got some problems.
So, yeah, but Joe Jerovicius, frankly, was a pretty decent slot receiver when he was at his prime.
Joe Jerovicius was amazing. I think he's such an underrated wide receiver when he played. You know, he wasn't particularly quick, but he got open somehow. No one knows how. But I think, no, wide receiver core, I think we are going to compete to be the best in this division because I can see Roddy White continuing to deteriorate. And Brandon Cooks really has to prove himself again. And, you know, what have Carolina really got outside of Benjamin?
Jimmy, since everybody's taking shots at you, go for it, man.
You guys are overlooking Carolina again, and that's fine. We'll be the team that no one picks, and we'll just lay in the weeds and win the division again. Kelvin, I mean, we don't have the big names like Kelvin or Mike Evans or Julio Jones, and that's fine. We got the Twin Towers in Kelvin and Devin. We signed Jared Boykin, which I think is going to be an effective receiver. He's not a sexy name, but he's going to be fine for Carolina. We're going to move the ball. We got the best tight end in the South. Greg Olsen's going to move the ball like he usually does, and we'll be fine. I have no problem with what we've done at wide receiver. I think this is one of the best wide receiver corps Carolina has had in probably the last 5 years. So I'm happy with what we got. We'll keep getting overlooked. We don't have the sexy names, and that's fine. We'll just keep on chugging along and win the division for the third year in a row.
You know, that is definitely a position where I think it's hard anybody could argue. Greg Olsen is probably the best tight end in the South, and I would argue Ed Dixon is probably competing right there for number two in the division. So you've got probably two of the best tight ends in this division right now.
I love that Dixon. When we picked him up last year, I was really pumped about that. And then another deep name that I really like is Brandon Williams. He was the guy, if you remember, he got tossed out, I think, in the Saints fight last year. I think that was the game. Chase, is that the game where Carolina and New Orleans fought and a bunch of people got ejected?
I believe so.
Yeah, Brandon Williams, he was the guy who I think actually threw the punches. He got ejected, but he's I'm sure he's taking some sort of steroids. He's a monster. If he gets any type of play time, he's very raw, athletic, and I think another year of just sitting behind Olsen and Dixon is only going to help him. But he's another deep name. He probably won't be, if you play fantasy dynasty football, he's a name to hold on to your taxi squad or something. Just keep him on the radar. But I love our tight end situation. And like I said, we'll keep laying low in the weeds and let the big names of Matt Ryan, and he'll go cold at the end of the season again and lose 37-0, and we'll be all right.
Well, let's move on to the defense. And we know Atlanta has made some moves on the defensive side of the ball. I still think Atlanta's got a very, very strong front seven. And I would say the best in the division? I don't know.
No, that's stupid. That's the Panthers. Come on, let's be real. Awesome.
The Panthers. Yeah, right.
I mean, I don't know about best front seven in the division. I know we have the best secondary in the division. We've got some pieces in the front seven, but we need to see how Dan Quinn's able to put it together, because unfortunately most of the pieces that we do have, you know, are coming off of injury years or are unproven. So before I go and say that we do have the best front seven, I'd like to think that there is the distinct possibility with everything that we've brought in through free agency in the draft. I'm not going to go ahead and put my stamp on that yet.
Yeah, actually, I'm not a big fan of the Falcons secondary, but all right, Jimmy, you've had some losses though on your front seven, so
I think our front seven coming into this year is probably the best on paper. I bet you, if I was a betting man, at the end of the year, we won't have the best seven. I think Frank Alexander is going to be better. I think Coney Ealy is going to be better, but Charles Johnson, I'm getting a little worried about Charles Johnson. He's always consistent for 8 to 10 sacks, but I really have this feeling that after this year, he has a huge cap number. I think Carolina's going to either try to restructure and get that cap number down or essentially move on from Charles Johnson. But coming into this year, I'd say we probably do have the best seven because we know what we have. We haven't really improved much. We lost Hardy, but we didn't play with him all last year. But if I'm a betting man, at the end of the season, we won't have the best seven in the South.
And I would take issue with the Atlanta having the best secondary in the division. If the people the Saints have on the field can put it together like they did 2 years ago, I think that we're in contention for that. You got Keenan Lewis and Brandon Brown are on the outsides, two bigger cornerbacks, physical guys who can play the press like Ryan likes to. You can put them on islands if you want. We have Jarris Bird, who people forget about last year, but he spent all offseason recovering from back surgery, came back late in the preseason, played a few games when, and no, he wasn't good, period, when he was on the field, but no one on our defense was, and his season got cut short after week four with a knee injury. And then you have Kenny Vaccaro, who last year had a sophomore slump, but his rookie year was in the running for defensive rookie of the year until he got hurt. And we also have PJ Williams, who we drafted in the third round this year. A lot of people had first round grades on him had he not had the DWI in April. So if we can stay healthy, I think the Saints are going to have a most improved secondary in the division.
Yeah, I'd like the Saints secondary here a little bit better than the Falcons secondary. I do think Carolina's got a couple of pieces, but I mean, you're talking about the ageless wonder Roman Harper in the back. That would have me.
Didn't they sign Peanut Thielman also?
They did. That's what I'm liking. Well, honestly, I like Peanut. I think Peanut Thielman still got a lot to offer here in the NFL. I don't think he's done by any sort of the imagination.
I'm just throwing his name out there for ageless wonder. I love Peanut. He graduated from the school I'm going to right now.
And then, I mean, everything. I will say this for you, Dan. Everything in Tampa Bay is young.
That's the only positive thing. I mean, the thing that really annoyed me about this draft was, I mean, there's not a lot I agree with when Warren Sapp says it. The front and the back end work together. And they didn't draft a single defensive lineman. I don't know what the hell Lovie Smith was thinking. Because if you're going to rely on George Johnson, who we signed him to the offer sheet and then we ended up trading effectively a fifth-round pick for him, he's got 6 sacks in 5 years. That's it. And you can't even draft someone like Danielle Hunter, you know, in the third round. I don't understand what he was doing there. And then you look at our secondary, it's awful. You've got DJ Swearinger, who we picked up off waivers, who's done nothing in 2 years. He's going to be paired with Chris Conte. And then they're talking about Mike Jenkins being the starting cornerback with Jonathan Banks. We're going to get torched in the secondary, absolutely torched. So for a defensive guy, why you don't focus on that side of the ball to me is mind-boggling.
Those guys going to start over Alteron Verner?
Well, Alteron Verner, that's a good point, actually. there's always one guy you forget, you know, Brandon Cooks, Chase. Alteron Verner, okay, he'll be the number one. But they're talking about Mike Jenkins being a starting cornerback. That is stupid. That is ridiculous. He's not a good cornerback. He's proved that. He's also got an injury history. And at least Jonathan Banks has proved, like you said, Pod, he's got a bit of youth behind him and he's snagged a few interceptions over the past couple of years. But, I mean, the strength will always be the interior defensive line with us, and I'm perfectly happy with that in the linebacking core, but you've got to pressure the quarterback. Otherwise, we're just going to get points put up all over the board on us.
Dan, we have Daquan Bowers in our rookie camp this weekend. I was high on him coming out of college, and I know he's had his issues, but does he have anything left to offer on the field?
I think he's strictly a left end. We used him a lot at D-tackle last year, but he was drafted to rush the passer. They were talking about him as a top-five pick when he came out and he had the knee issue. But I think he's a rotational player really now. He's fairly good against the run, but when you draft someone to rush the quarterback and they don't do that very well, it's no reason he slipped.
I remember the year we drafted Cam Newton, Mel Kiper, it was either Mel Kiper or Tommy Shea on their mock drafts, one of the early ones. They put Daquan Bowers as the top pick for Carolina before Cam or Blaine Gabbert started jumping up, and I was pumped about Daquan Bowers, man. I really wanted him. Thank goodness we didn't take him.
I was going to say this, Tim. You drafted a Clemson defensive end, so you know he's going to be a bust.
He's a linebacker. He's a linebacker.
Well, yeah, but he's going to put his hand in the dirt, really, isn't he?
After he's picking himself up after taking down all of your quarterbacks, yes.
That's not going to be difficult.
Let's take a look at some of these schedules now. I'm going to start in Atlanta, where I believe we're talking about the team to beat in the NFC South. And we're going to learn a lot about Atlanta right off the bat on Monday Night Football, September 14th, against the Philadelphia Eagles. And then your week two, you're going on the road to New York. And then week three, you're on the road to Dallas. So if the Falcons have any hope at all, it's that the schedule gets a little bit easier after those first three games against the NFC East.
Yeah, not looking forward to how the season is starting. Philadelphia for Monday Night Football, we're going to be there. So hopefully it goes well. But, the quarterback situation for them, I don't see Sam Bradford being, a big issue because he's never healthy. And we'll see how it goes. I'm really not looking forward to that being our first game of the year. But last year I wasn't looking forward to the Saints being our first game of the year, and we were able to pull that one out. So we'll see how it goes. The schedule does get easier because I'm sure there's a stretch where we get to play Tampa Bay, New Orleans, and Carolina in a row, and that should be three wins.
Let's see here. You actually – I like your home stretch. Week 13 all the way to 17, you're at Tampa, at Carolina, at Jacksonville, but then you finish up home Carolina, home New Orleans. So that should play out okay for you at the very least. You also end up week 4 and 5, your home versus the Texans and the Washington professional football team. You do have – it's funny the way your schedule sets up. It looks like you have some stretches of some scariness and then some stretches of pure safedom.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing is, the stretches of scariness, the guys are going to, they're going to get up for those. And, if we can come out of, the first five games at 3-2 or at the worst 2-3, then I feel like we're going to be in a good position as long as we don't look at the schedule and say, oh, well, these next five games are easy. We'll be okay. So, because that's been, the downfall for, a lot of these NFL teams over the years. They're like, oh, we've got Jacksonville and, oh, we've got Houston. Those should be easy wins. And then all of a sudden, J.J. Watt scoring 3 touchdowns on you in a single game, and you're like, how did that even happen? Why did we lose this game? So as long as, Dan Quinn can get the guys up, get the guys ready, and we don't have to worry about stupid losses, we can do 10-6 and, cruise into the playoffs with that, quote, easy final five-game stretch.
We're moving on now to the Saints, and as I look over your schedule here, Chase, that last game of the season, week 17 at Atlanta, I mean, that could be for the NFC South.
I expect it to be, unless we've run away with it already, of course.
Well, drinking a little early this morning.
I think everything with the schedule this year is set up great for us. I think we're the only team in the league that doesn't have back-to-back road games. The only two back-to-back are sandwiched in between our bye week. We have late bye week and
week 11.
And three primetime games all at home. I mean, you can't ask for more favors from the schedule makers than we got this year.
Well, let's look at probably what will be your circle games, and we'll start with week one at Arizona. That will definitely be a tough challenge as Arizona's much improved and had the two-time coach of the year there. And you'll definitely have your hands full right out of the gate. You then host Tampa Bay, which, you know, pardon me, Dan, but, you know, it probably will be an easier game than when you have to face Tampa again in week 14. Then you're at Carolina, and we know the Saints don't like traveling away from the Superdome all that much. So that'll be a little rough. And then Dallas comes in at week 4. So the opening of your season's not as easy as you might think.
No, we are our first really 6 games.
And then, I was going to say, at Philadelphia and then home versus Atlanta. So, yeah.
Yep.
And then at Indianapolis. So your first 7 are actually not exactly what you'd like to see.
Well, better than having them at the end of the season when you're fighting injuries and that kind of stuff. I mean, I think this year, I mean, regardless of what the schedule looks like, after the embarrassment last year, I think we started 1-4 or something like that. We have to get off to a fast start regardless of who we're playing. And I think the first 6 games, if we could come out of that 3-3 or 4-2, the later half of the schedule – well, I mean, it's the latter half of the schedule is a cakewalk compared to those first few games. So if we could come out at least .500, I think we're set up pretty well to succeed this year.
Jimmy, in Carolina, your first 4 games is probably a nice, easy stretch for you, although week 3, you do host New Orleans. Now, that said, we just mentioned New Orleans is not exactly the world beaters they are when they're at home, but you're at Jacksonville. You host the Texans, you host the Saints, you're at Tampa, and then you go on your bye, which you're going to need because the next stretch of games is where your scariness lives, at Seattle, hosting the Eagles, hosting the Colts, and hosting the Packers. I guess the one thing you can say there, though, is you're hosting those 3 big teams.
Yeah, that stretch week 6 to 9, I'm looking at right now, we have to go 2-2 right there. Can't lose all 4. Bad news, the Eagles and Colts game are both primetime games, which we never show up for, so you can count on those for losses. but the start of the season, I like. I think Jacksonville's going to be much better, but I do think the wind came out of their sails when Dante Fowler went down, so I think we'll be fine with the first 2 games. Saints always play us tough, but I always think we tend to split games with the Saints, so we usually win the home game, lose at New Orleans. At Tampa, it's always good to win down there, but like we probably will split with them again. And I think this is the 3rd or 4th season in a row we've played Seattle, and we've lost every time. But after that tough stretch, we have a little bit of break with the Titans and Redskins, and that final 6 games, at Cowboys, at New Orleans, home against the Falcons, at New York, at Atlanta, and then host the Buccaneers. That's another tough finish. But, I think the big important thing this year, we finally got a Thanksgiving game for the first time in franchise history at Dallas. So hopefully we can, pull the upset down there and enjoy it while we're eating turkey.
Dallas is a tough team to beat on Thanksgiving. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Dan, I'm looking at your schedule. We've mentioned a lot of the same teams because you guys are playing the same division. I'd be interested to know, though, what your thoughts are on the end of your schedule. You end up starting in week 13. Actually, I'm going to start in week 10. You host Dallas, then you're at the Eagles, at the Colts, you host the Falcons, you host the Saints, then you're at St. Louis, you host the Bears, and you're at the Panthers. So I guess, really, what are your thoughts on the Rams and the Bears this season? Are you hoping that those are games you can come up big in, or are you still concerned that your team can't match up?
I can't see us beating the Rams. I think they're going to be contenders for the NFC West this season, but I think the Bears would be our opportunity. If you look at our schedule overall, there's either a tough run of games or an easy run of games. There's not a lot in between. So if you, like you said, Dallas, I can't see us winning. or the Eagles or the Colts. We've got to win those home games against divisional rivals, but as you know from last year, we didn't win a single home game, so I wouldn't bank on anything this season. We're going to have to finish strong after that stretch. We're going to have to beat the Falcons and Saints, I think, and then we're going to have to go on the road and beat the Panthers. But I think it sets up fairly nicely, because before that tough stretch, we play, I mean, we start off with the Titans, but towards from week four, actually, we've got the Panthers, Jaguars, we've got the Redskins, Falcons, and Giants, and I think they're all winnable games.
And I mean, obviously, everyone has your week one game circled as the number one, and the number two picks will go head to head as Tampa Bay hosts Tennessee. It's Jameis Winston versus Marcus Mariota. So you're going to know right off the bat whether you made the right pick or not.
Oh, we know we made the right pick. Mariota's going to get crushed.
One more thing before we end, guys, and we'll start again with you, Tim. I want to know what record your team needs to have for you to consider it an okay season, and what record you expect your team to finish with.
For an okay season, we need to start back with a winning record. So 9-7, I would be okay with under a new head coach and with all the changes that we made. I would consider that okay. Where I think that we're going to be is, I think there's a legitimate possibility that we might be 10-6. So fingers crossed for that. But mostly just looking to be, you know, back above 500 where we belong.
Chase, your team, an okay season, and where you expect your season to end?
I think an okay season is 10-6. And the reason I'm saying that is because with us drafting Garrett Grayson in the third round, and with Breeze being in after this season, only having 1 year left on his contract, I'm not sure if a 9-7 season is enough to keep him around for another year. I really think that for us to see him there longer, we have to show that we're at least close to competing for a Super Bowl. I may be wrong. I hope I am, but I don't know if anything less than 10-6 is going to be enough to keep us from going rebuild, or maybe I should say restock like we did this year. I think that's a pretty realistic expectation, 10-6. I think we can go anywhere from 9-7 to 11-5, because even though we have an easy schedule on paper, the Saints do have a history of losing one or two games a year that everyone thinks they should run away with. But I think a 10-6 season, I'd be pretty happy with that.
Jimmy, your okay season and what you expect your season to end up?
I think an okay season would be 9-7. And I'm coming from the first time a team in the NFC South has won the division in back-to-back years. So for a three-peat, the odds are against us. So if we finish 9-7, I think signs are pointing up. Even if 9-7, I don't think wins the division. I think 9-7 is about what I think we'll finish, and I think that is a good finish for us, considering what we've gone through, some losses and some additions. I think we've been able to develop and just get guys better with a 9-7 record. But I think, like I said, sticking around that 9-7 window might give us a game or two to either go below 500 or get to the 10-11 win range. But the odds are stacked against us, just as looking at the history, as far as winning it three times in a row. But so yeah, I'd shoot for 9-7.
And wrapping it all up with Dan?
I think an okay season would be 8-8. You know, it's last year was terrible, going 2-14. But I think, if you're talking about floors and ceilings, I can see us being in that 7-9 to maybe 10-6 area. But, you know, I'm an optimist, so I'm going to say we should go 9-7.
Wow. So you are an optimist.
I am an optimist.
You are an optimist with a rookie quarterback, and I would say expectations are high with the Saints. But, Chase, I think you've nailed it. I think the concerns about Drew Brees' future in New Orleans. And I still say, I mean, if Drew Brees ends up playing for another football team in the NFL, I pity the fools that are still in New Orleans, because I sense it will not be pretty.
I agree with you, Pod, and I don't want to see it. I want to see Brees retire wearing a Saints jersey. I know Tom Benson has been having a lot of health problems. He wants to win another championship before his time is up, and I think that Peyton and Loomis are going to do everything in their power to do it, but I also think they're realistic, and it's kind of like Belichick does. It's better to lose someone a year too early than a year too late.
The best part about what you guys have said, though, out of the division that didn't have a team with a winning record last year, 10-6 is all you need to do to win the division. So you've got that to look forward to. Guys, it's been a pleasure. I'm glad we stayed away from the Wells Report. My son, Zach, reminds me that, the NFL really only shot themselves in the foot with this punishment on the Patriots. There's one less kid now that is going to realize his dream of being an NFL player because of the draft pick taken away from the Patriots. I mean, that is really the shame of all of this. One less kid is going to see his dream of being an NFL player. It's a crying shame, frankly. And I don't think we should allow this to stand.
Just be thankful that your head coach is going to be here this season, Pod. As someone who went through one of these BS NFL investigations, be thankful that you're not losing the hoodie for a year.
Yes, I can definitely look forward to that.
Todd, before we wrap up.
Sure.
One quick question for you, since you have no business in the South besides having a man crush for Atlanta. Give us your standings as what you view the South and with a record for each team.
All right. Well, let's look at this real quick. So my man crush on the Atlanta Falcons has me thinking 11-5 right now. Interesting, as I went over it real quick, I actually see two losses against the Saints. Folks, what you don't know is that I've edited out my nonsensical win-loss record on each schedule here. And while as much as I love the Atlanta Falcons at 11-5, I actually have the Saints winning the division at 12-4. I guess maybe I love the Saints more than I love the Falcons.
No, fine. You just made a mistake. We're going to split it.
It's also May 16th, so who knows? All right. So I've got the Panthers set up here for a 8-8 season right in the middle. So that'd be one less than what you expected, Jimmy. So that would be a failure season for you.
I would.
We all know how my preseason predictions go, though. So
we're looking good, man.
You've got that to look forward to. And finally, Tampa Bay, where 8-8 is an okay season, but anywhere up to 10-6 is expected here by Dan. Let's find out what my preseason predictions have them at. So, ladies and gentlemen, the my record for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers comes out to 4-12. They get twice as many wins as they had last year, but that is way below, Dan, what you had them marked at.
Hey, tell me about it. We're going to become the Raiders, apparently, in your eyes. That's baloney.
Well, listen, I mean, you have a lot of holes that you got to fix, and I don't think Jameis Winston is all you think he is. So we'll see if Jameis can prove me and a few other people wrong. But
we've got more talent than people think. We've got more talent.
All right. Well, that's why when we do these preseason predictions on May 16th, it's really all a bunch of bunk and hooey, like the Wells Report. So,
full circle.
Tim, Dan, Jimmy, Chase, thank you very much. If you want to reach out to us and share your predictions for the NFC South, please send us an email, nextfanup@gmail.com. You can tweet us at NFU Podcast or on Facebook. Just search Next Fan Up or go to facebook.com/NFU Podcast. We will be talking to you again next week. I believe, might be mistaken, but I believe next week is the AFC East, and we may have a special guest for that particular podcast. Our first guest ever on the Next Fan Up podcast, but I'm not going to give you more than that. That's all I'm going to tell you. Guys, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for joining me, and there you have it.
Well, I think we learned today that, you know, this game is four quarters long.
What do you need, little girl?
You're going to have to edit out.
Calculator. Right there. For Zach.
Calculator for Zach. The hell is he doing?
Zach made a calculator for.
Exactly. That's what I'm thinking. Like, wait a second.
You can't trust a kid that's doing homework on a Saturday.
No,
I don't think he's not doing homework. He's playing Xbox. So,
you know what? I bet one of his friends told him that you can type boobs in on the calculator. And he wants to see it for himself.
I wouldn't be surprised.
And follow me on Twitter at Tim is hiding for 9-year-old soccer updates.